Hey, everybody. Glad to have you with us for another episode of the Curtain Call Podcast. It's a production of the Yes Network. He is John J. Filippelli. I'm Justin Shackle. Our wonderful producer, Dan Bassone, with us as well. So, John, month plus into the baseball season. The Yankees are playing well here. They have a three-game series with the Astros at the stadium beginning on Tuesday night. We're going to get to that in a little bit, but they're 10 games above 500. And the Yankees are playing well mainly because of their pitching has been terrific. And I don't think that is being overstated at the moment here. It has been absolutely terrific. But did you think this team was going to be 10 games above 500 at any point before the return of Gerrit Cole?
No. No, I didn't. You know, when you couple the fact that Cole has been out and the fact that Aaron Judge has gotten off to a slow start, if you had told me that when spring training was around the beginning of spring training, I would have said, wow, the Yankees will be in some trouble because they're so dependent on those two players. No, not to mitigate Soto. I mean, a new Soto would be terrific, because he's a terrific player. But he's actually outperformed terrific. He's been incredible. Soto's been incredible. But I mean, I just penciled in terrific and was going with from there. So, you know, but anyway, having said that, if you said to me that you would not have Cole and Judge would be off to just a slow start, because that's what it is. You know, I would have said there's no way there'll be 10 games over 500, you know, come after the first week in May. And just didn't see it as that. But you know what? They played well. They actually played the aggregate. They played well. I mean, there's some things that they don't do well, and I think it hurts them. But in the aggregate, they played very well.
I tell you what, Dean, 10 games over 500. A lot of that on the offensive side has been Juan Soto. And John, this is a pleasant time in New York City. Springtime, weather warming, Knicks, Rangers. It's a frenzy every night at Madison Square Garden. Sport fans are feeling really good right now. And I really think Juan Soto's part of that as well. I think his amazing start is part of that equation between the Knicks and the Rangers and the weather obviously warming up. Spring in New York City is an event. And Soto, probably not as grand as the Knicks or the Rangers, but I think he's a big reason why Yankee fans are all around very, very happy at the moment with this team being 10 games above 500. He has been everything and more. And I'm wondering, though, how tough is it for a fan to kind of just sit there and simply enjoy what Juan Soto has been doing and not have every single big hit conjure up thoughts about his free agency? How tough has that been for you?
I got past it, and I could appreciate it. It's Juan Soto on his own terms. You know, I know the Yankees gave up a lot to get him. They did. And it's unfortunate that the way the business is constructed, there really could not have been a deal that would have been put into place that would have guaranteed him longevity with the Yankees right now. But the reality is that's not the way the business is. They're going to play out the free agency because he and Scott Boras, because they can, and they will. And they're going to maximize his contract, whether the money and the annual AAV on it, annual average value. And they will maximize that, and they'll maximize the years because he is a generational talent. He just is. You know, he's one of the three best players in the game. You know, he just is. He's great. And he can do everything that you want in a player. And he also has the intangible of being a fan of tremendous fan favorite. When he goes out to the outfield, the way he engages that crowd, he engages those people in the outfield like nobody can. It's like, I mean, other players could do it, but they don't. It's not their way. He is very, very engaging. And the fan base just has fallen in love with him. You know, that's not to say they don't love Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole. They do. They love them too. They love other players on the Yankees. But this guy is really incredibly is seminal in that respect. And he's very, very, he has a lot of emotion and he carries it out to the field every at bat, every play in the field, every throw, every catch. He maximizes, is maximized and underscored because of his, the emotion that he attaches to the way he plays.
I would say Juan Soto never does not meet a moment in which there's an opportunity to endear himself. to this fan base. If you look back on Sunday's game against the Tigers, that was the rain-shortened game. I mean, he made a catch for the third out down the right field line, and he crossed over into foul territory right up against the wall. And right there is a young fan, perfectly in front of Juan Soto. What does he do? He hands the ball to the kid, and the young fan's mouth just was wide open for literally half a minute. And it's small things like that. And obviously, what does he do later? He literally wins the game for you. He breaks a 2-2 tie with the bases clearing double. So he's right in the middle of everything. The moments are finding him, whether it is on the field during the game or fan moments where he has a chance to interact with this fan base and continue to acclimate and endear himself to these Yankee fans. So yeah, I think it is in the back of their mind, his impending free agency, with every little thing that he does. But you got to let everything play out and kind of just enjoy what you have in front of you with a guy like Juan Soto here. And he's a big reason why, John, the Yankees are top 10 in baseball in runs scored. They're top 10 in team OPS. I know the offense has been inconsistent, and that's kind of tough to believe, but I think that accentuates the fact that offense is down league-wide here. You have seen parts of this Yankees lineup that has not fully clicked. So with it being this early in the season, does that leave you more concerned about what's to come or excited?
I think they're going to hit. Okay, I think their offense will become more of a force than it is, and they'll find some consistency. I do, because I think Judge will hit, and once Judge hits, that's a different lineup again. Soto makes them a different lineup. Judge and Soto together can make them lethal. Okay, and if they get help from someplace else, Volpe started off really well, and I was struggling a little bit now, but Volpe could find consistency again. You know, so Stanton has actually played pretty well. You know, I think if all things considered, I mean, he's gotten some big hits for them, and he's been good protection in the lineup. So, you know, if Soto can play well, you can see Volpe turned around here. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you got Volpe, you got Soto, you got Judge, you got Stanton, you've got yourself. You got Rizzo. Rizzo has played well, played better. Found some long ball recently too. So you know that's
got to include Verdugo.
And Verdugo, I'm sorry
to interject. I mean, he's probably been the second best offensive player.
That's true.
In the aggregate,
he's been great. Actually, he's done a really good job. He plays a really good left field too. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about that. He's a real left fielder, real one. And so you look at that and you say to yourself, why can't the Yankees be an elite offensive team? When you go through the talent and name the roster we just checklisted there, why couldn't they be that? Why shouldn't they be that? I think they will be. I think they will be better for sure. And if they find consistency, that's what they need. And I think they'll be okay there. I think the starting pitching has been relatively good, all things considered there. I think there were some questions for sure. But honestly, I think they've been somewhat consistent. And the fact they haven't had Cole comes back, hopefully comes back, and he's Gerrit Cole. The Yankees really have some pitching there, right? Because right now the pitching's okay. With Cole, it would be a lot more than okay. So, and the bullpen has held up nicely. I mean, the bullpen has had, they've had their struggles. I think they have anyway. And there are times they go in there, I go, what is going on with that bullpen? But honestly, there are times also when you see why you, reasons to like them. There are reasons to dislike them and the reasons to like them. And when the reasons to like them outweighs the ones that dislike them, then the Yankee bullpen is just fine.
I would say this is the best sign to illustrate how well things are going without Gerrit Cole with the pitching staff, because fans are already starting to talk about, man, when Gerrit comes back, who are you taking out of the rotation? Like, it's going to be a problem. Like, we have a long way to go before Gerrit actually does return, probably over a month from now, and it's just the first week of May. But also, the game is going to declare itself and answer that question for us. No problem. Again, over a month to go. But that's where they're at right now with this rotation. And I'm with you with the bullpen. I think it's acquitted itself nicely here over this stretch where they played 17 straight games without an off day. Yeah. Overall, the team is playing a lot of close games. And I'm looking at the numbers here. 16 of the last 21 games have been decided by two runs or fewer. And you would think, man, that puts your bullpen in a corner. They're getting taxed pitching all these high leverage pitches, close, tight situations. But I'll tell you what, they've stepped up. And if you really dig deep, the pitches overall, they look pretty free and easy from this relief corps. You can probably quibble here and there, but when you talk about, and I'm going to start with Clay Holmes because you know I'm a big supporter of his, Clay Holmes, Luke Weaver has emerged to me as this fireman type who's going to extinguish any type of problem in the mid
to
late
innings.
Multiple innings, too.
It gives you multiple innings, too, which is a weapon. That's a weapon this day and age.
He has been a serious part of this team. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No, but if you're going to win, you got to get help from unexpected places. I've been preaching that. We all talk about that. Yeah. It's the truth. You got to get help in places like Luke Weaver, where you maybe weren't anticipating him being a huge part of the team. He becomes a big part of the team. You weren't anticipating Cabrera being a big part of the team. He's a big part of the team now, Cabrera is, and he's played really well. I wasn't anticipating Verdugo being, to your point earlier, being a big part of the team. He's a pretty big part of the team. You know, you knew Soto would have to play a big part. You knew Judge is a big part. You knew Cole healthy is a big part. You know your big parts going. Rizzo has to be a big part. But Stanton has stepped up and done nicely as well. So, you know, there are guys who you didn't, you know, you've got to get the help from that maybe you didn't see it. I mean, the Yankees need Torres to get going. Torres has to give them something. And right now he's not giving them a whole lot. He's got to stop making the mistakes he's making, and he's got to find some offensive consistency.
Yeah, I would thought like the lack of power, I think it naturally just creeps into a player. I mean, how could it not? It's part of your living. It's part of your DNA. And we've seen the power from Glaber in the past. And there was a couple plays over the last week or so. There was that drop ball at second base with Glaber in Baltimore that led to a big inning for the Orioles against Carlos Rodon and knocked them out of the game. That was the only game that wasn't close in the Baltimore series. There's another play that didn't really amount to much, but he didn't slide into second base, kind of ran into the second baseman, and he could have really injured himself and the second baseman. So you're starting to see those plays from Gleyber Torres, but there obviously still time, and I fully expect him to start heating up as a hitter. And he was doing pretty well in the leadoff spot before really sinking in. He was drawing a lot of walks. He was taking a lot of pitches. So we'll see what happens there with Gleyber. But going back to that bullpen, has this dominant stretch made you come around on the bullpen a little bit? Like, do you have a little bit more faith in the relievers than you did?
Yeah, I do. Because they have, Detroit's not much of an offensive team, but, you know, still in all, you know, they were better than 500 team, and the Orioles are the Orioles. I've seen more out of them than I thought was there, to be honest with you. I was not a huge supporter of the bullpen. I still have my questions about, in the long run, about some of it. But at the end of the day, they've played well, especially of lately. And you got to hope that continues. That makes it look when your starters are not giving you a lot of length, because Yankees don't get length out of their starters on the whole. They haven't gotten length, right? If you look at the guys going deep into the game, you don't get a lot. That's the trend of the game anyway. You don't get a starters going deep anyway. For the most part, they hit 100, they're gone, or around 100 pitches they go. And some guys, it's 100 pitches is five innings. That's it. You know, that's what you got. And that's fine if you get through that. But at the end of the day, that leaves you four more innings, and it leaves you a bullpen that's probably going to take you four more innings. It might take you four guys to get through those. It might take you maybe three, but it's certainly going to take you four to get through. So that's a lot to do that every day or around that every day. I'm not saying they have that sort of shortness in the rotation that goes on every day, but it goes on enough where it's a concern.
Yeah, Flip, my argument to that is that that's happening around the entire league. And I'm not saying
happening. It does happen in a lot of places.
Like, how do we, what do we do there long-term? Like, this is obviously
that's the way the game is
going.
Then you have to adjust to that. But that doesn't make the burden any less.
No, you're right. But I'm talking about, like, how are you going to, these relievers are going to get crushed. And I'm talking about league-wide, not just within the Yankees.
Well, they're
going to
get crushed when it will come around the end of July. Mm-hmm. When guys who, like, they've had a season's worth of work already, and you're asking them to do so much more because you still got a lot of year left, season left, and you got the postseason, hopefully. So, yeah, that's why innings become important. You got to manage those. You got to manage the starting pitching because you need those guys to go deep for you in the season. So you got to manage their innings. You also manage your bullpen. And there were times when you're tempted to go to a player who might have a hot hand, but you've already used them a couple of days in a row. You don't want to overuse them. You don't want to risk run the risk of injury. There's a lot of things that go into these decisions as to who can pitch and when they can pitch, what they manage their workload. So you have them so they can be relatively in good shape come the end of the season. And as the season goes on, if the Yankees find themselves, the Yankees will be in a race with the Orioles to the end. That's the way this is trending. I don't see anybody. I don't see Toronto. I don't see Tampa Bay. I don't even see the Red Sox, who I know played better. I don't see them as being real challengers to the Yankees or the Orioles. I just don't. Can they make some noise? Are they better than 500 teams in most cases? Yeah, they are. But that doesn't make them in that division. It's the Yankees and the Orioles, or the Orioles and the Yankees. Take your pick.
Broad view here, what you were talking about moments ago with maybe starters needing to get, you know, squeezed an extra out or so to try and limit the arms and the bullpen from being overworked. Fans, just keep that in the back of your mind. Keep that there, because you're going to see certain situations in the weeks and months ahead, and you're going to be scratching your head like, why did Aaron Boone or whatever manager leave their starter in for that extra batter, that extra hitter? Why did he try to squeeze the, you know, an extra two outs, or not have his reliever who he's going to bring in this inning start a clean inning overall? This is an issue around Major League Baseball. It's not just with the team that you are watching on the day-to-day basis. So you're going to see more of that. File that away. That's the reason why, because it's unsustainable. Starting pitchers need to work more. They need to be conditioned to work more. This is a pitching culture issue. And it's going to start at lower levels before it really surfaces at the top level in the big leagues. But just file that away here, and before you start asking your questions, why the manager did something that you didn't agree with in terms of pitch usage, that's baked into the equation there. All right, Yankees and Astros coming up at the stadium this week, Flip. This Astros series, final time that Yanks and Astros are meeting in the regular season. Houston's had a terrible start. They enter the series 10 games under 500. Yankees swept them in four games to open the season to already win any type of tiebreaker that might be needed down the road. So on a scale of 1 to 10, between the actual game, the state of the Astros, how juiced are you for this series in the Bronx?
I'm still excited about it. I mean, I know Houston hasn't played well. They've had a lot of injuries. There's a lot of reasons why they're not playing well. But they still... You know, they're like vampires. You got to stake them. You got to stake them while you can. If you got to just beat them where you can. And because they're never out of it until they're out of it. And I've seen it. There's been some prior years where they've gotten off or hit bad spells, the Astros, and they've rallied to come back and been formidable, whether it be the regular season, postseason. They've come back and, you know, been the Houston Astros. They're still an incredible organization. They've got some incredible players. I don't want to face Justin Verlander if I don't have to. I don't want to see Altuve at the plate if I don't have to see him. Alvarez is a beast. Alvarez is one of the best players in the game. They've got players, you know, and they've had injuries. There's reasons why they're not playing well. They've got some guys in that bullpen that are pretty good too. They've got some players, and they always have. And I don't count them out. And there's still the history between the Yankees and Houston, which, especially if you're a Yankee fan, you will never get past what allegedly happened, and that's obviously fuels the rivalry. They're the hated Astros. That's what they are, and the teams don't like each other. That's the truth too. So there's always an intensity when they meet. It's kind of like the Red Sox rivalry has taken on a little less underscored the last couple of years because of the way the Red Sox have played. But it's still Yankees Houston is a big rivalry. They're big games, and the Yankee fans especially want to see them. We want to win because when we need the games, we have to stay with the Orioles, and also because they're Houston. And no matter, even though they are 10 games under, it's a long season. And I've seen a lot of teams in middle of May or approaching the middle of May who were on top of the league, and by the end of July they were done, or by the beginning of July they were done. I mean, you could go right now through Major League Baseball right now, and I'll give you 6-7 teams that are finished. They got no chance, none. And what are we, the beginning of May? I mean, that's I would not put Houston on that list. I will tell you that. I would not go close to putting them on that list. Although, you know, right now they're playing from home. They got to dig themselves out of the hole. Believe me, there'll be a lot of excitement in the stadium in the next couple of days. Believe me.
I'm with you. I would probably put it as a 7. And I think that's fair. Yankees can deal Houston a big blow. But even if they did, even if they swept the Astros out of the stadium, only going to take like two and a half weeks of good baseball for Houston to get back. There is so much time for the Astros to get right. And I'm not putting it past them to not be able to do that. And overall, Jose Altuve still leading the league in hits, still hitting well above 315, 320. He is still producing, and he is as hated as any player that Yankee fans have seen over the last 10 to 20 years. So when you have that mixture, you have Verlander on the mound as well. He's been a thorn in the Yankees' side for quite some time. He's pitched well, and as he's returned from his injury that kept him out from the early start of the season, the Astros, until, like you said, until they are dead in the water, officially, physically, whatever you want to call it, I would not count them out. They are vampires. I think that's the perfect way to put it. And the Yankees have a chance to continue to drive a stake right through their hearts if they're able to sweep them
out.
Even in
May. As we start this, they're 7 games out.
Yeah.
Astros, right?
It can all change.
22. They're 7 games out. They're behind the Rangers.
I mean, they're behind the A's.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that's a surprise. See, the A's to me,
that says everything.
Surprise. Yeah. Right. See, they're almost a 500 team. That to me is surprising. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you look at, you know, you look at the, see again, but look at the league, right? You know, it's like, who do you have? The Guardians have played very well, right? The Guardians have played well. Minnesota hasn't played.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't have the standings right in front of me. There's four teams in the AL Central that are above 500.
Yeah,
that's going to last.
Right, the Guardians, the Twins, the Royals have played very well. I mean, the Royals,
the Tigers.
Right? Tigers haven't played badly in over 500. The only team that's, you know, that is goodbye. We don't have to worry. Is the White Sox. Other than that, they're 15 out. I'm looking at the standings now. So yeah, okay. So I mean, so they've struggled mightily as most people thought they would. But having said that, you know, so the Central is pretty strong. It's like the American East is pretty strong. I mean, you got the Orioles and the Yankees, right? The Red Sox are 3 games over. They're only 4.5 out. They're in third. The Rays are at 500. They're 6 out. And the Blue Jays are 3 under and they're 7.5 out. So I wouldn't count the Blue Jays or I don't see the Jays or the Rays in this at the end. I don't, but they're still formidable teams and could give you a real rough time. And that division is tough. The American League is just tough. The Red Sox to me continued. That's surprising to me, but they've had some good pitching and some good performances by some of their regular players. And that's why they're there. But anyway, so you look at it and you look at where the Astros are. You know, and you got the Rangers, the defending world champions. The Mariners are above 500. They're only half a game out. And Oakland is right there. Again, I think that's surprising, but still in all, they're right there. So, I mean, Houston is not playing well. There's not, and behind them is the Angels, who perennially underperform. Sorry, they do. And they've got their own, another set of issues. That's a whole other story. You know, so, I mean, while we're doing this, let's finish this. Let's go National League a little bit. Let's do this a little bit. Let's have some fun.
Yeah.
Phillies, you got the Braves. And I mean, the Braves have had like every injury known to mankind. I mean, they've got like 7 different players I know who are considerable players. All, you know, Olson, Riley, Strider, you know, guys like that who are just terrific players who you hate to lose, and yet they've lost at one point or another. And
yet they're not necessarily off to a slow start.
They're 20-12
behind the Phillies.
They're 20-12, and the Phillies are 25-11. I mean, those are great starts. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like everybody else. Then you got the Nationals at 500. The Mets are a little around 500. They're 7.5 out. The Marlins are finished, obviously, at 10-27. They're not going anywhere. So then you look at the Central, right? You've got the Brewers and the Cubs are, you know, around playing decently. Pirates have slumped a lot lately, but they're only 4 out. The Reds are only 4 out. The Cardinals are 5.5 out. That's a close division. That's not bad. Right, you go to the West, you got the Dodgers, and then you got the Padres hanging in with them, and then you've got everybody else. You know, so, you know, the Dodgers are formidable with a lot of talent and Ohtani being great, and they have a lot of talent on that team. So, you know, you go through it, and, you know, baseball has got, let's see, it's, I would say the Dodgers are a super team. I would say they are. The Phillies, I would say, are playing like a super team. The Braves are a super team. There's 3 in the National League but that I would say are formidable teams. In the American League, you've got the Orioles and the Yankees. Let's go 3. There's 5 teams. You go to the Central, the Guardians makes it 6. The Twins are pretty good. I'll throw them in there. So let's go.
Yeah,
7.
Check back in a month with Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see where
But right now, where we are right now.
Yeah.
The Rangers are, you know, 4 under 4 over 500. That doesn't make them great, but that allows the Astros to stay in the race. The Astros are in the race at 12 and 22 because the Rangers are winning the division at four games over. So, you know, that's not a great division. Or you could say maybe it's a balanced division with the Rangers, the Mariners, the A's. Yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know. So anyway, how many great teams really are there in the game?
I would say this. If you're going to stack them on in terms of tiers, like I would put the Phillies and the Braves in the very tippy top tier.
Right. I would Dodgers lump, too. Got to put the Dodgers.
I see I wouldn't. I would lump the Dodgers in with the Yankees and the Orioles in the very next tier. I would group.
Well, that's like
the
one and one A. If you go
yeah,
to tier,
it, well, yeah, that's what I'm doing
be
right
a
now.
One and a one A.
I would say,
one and a two.
See, it's like the Phillies and the Braves.
Yeah.
I would be surprised right now if they were beaten in an important series. That's how I'm looking at it. And then the tier 1A, I would put the Yankees there with the Orioles and the Dodgers. And then after that, I think there's a big drop off, but then I would probably put teams like the Mariners and the Padres, and I mean, take your pick, the Guardians, if you want to give, you know, if you want to throw respect on the AL Central. It's tough for me not to do it at this point. They're doing a good job at this moment, so maybe I'd put Cleveland in there as well. But that's how I'd look at it. Like for me right now, the Phillies and the Braves are the two top teams that if you're talking about playing an important series, I'd be shocked that they got, you know, if they got beaten handedly, and the Braves just did by the Dodgers. I understand that, but I'm still putting Atlanta up there just because I think things just click in a different dimension. And maybe I'm underselling the Dodgers, but that's how I see it at this moment.
Might be. I think you really are underselling them a little bit. I think they really are. That's a terrific baseball team, and it's a terrific organization. And, you know, to me, it's about, a lot of it is organizations too. It isn't so much about, yes, teams perform and then teams don't perform. But a lot of times the teams that really perform well consistently through the years are teams that have organizations and have built organizations. The Orioles have built an organization now. I mean, I know it's only their second year of real viability right now, but I'm just telling you, they built an organization, and they did it by getting a lot of the ex-Astro executives who were running the Astros came over to run the Orioles. And I mean, it's no mistake. I mean, they helped build through the draft. They had poor performances. They stockpiled really good picks, and they made good picks. They didn't just get a draft pick and waste it. Those picks are becoming legitimate major league players or stars, and in some cases, superstars. So you've got deep organizations. Not only can you play because you get the top college talent or the top drafted talent, you also, you know, you're also playing well because you have there are other factors that go into it, but you know you're getting you can also trade those players. You know, like you know, I'm not saying they're going to trade. Holiday came up with the Orioles and didn't play very well. He's very, very young. He's very, very young, and he just wasn't ready for the big leagues. But he's going to be a great player, and there's nobody who sees him and doesn't believe he's going to be a great player. And the Orioles realize that. But you've got Henderson at short, so what are they going to do? Henderson was a rookie. Henderson's one of the best players in the game right now. He really is. I mean, I was asking
Aaron Boone about who, you know, player his size, because he's not a small guy. Gunnar Henderson's like 6'3", playing shortstop. No, he's 22. Like he's probably still doesn't have all his man strength, right? And I was asking Aaron Boone, like, does his physicality remind you of anybody? And he was like, yeah, it's a left-handed Bobby Witt Jr. or maybe someone like an Eric Chavez. But I thought that was underselling him a little bit. I think Gunnar Henderson has a chance to be a great superstar. I know Chavez at his peak was a terrific player, but I you know, Henderson is a problem. You know, if you're a Yankee fan, the Orioles have a handful of problems for you on their roster. And you talked about it. Yeah, they got into the position.
Yeah, pretty good.
They got into the position to pick those top players, but they hit on them. And that's the big difference.
Well, that's it. You're right. Justin, that's it. Now you have to be in the position, but you've got to have the draft acumen. You've got to be able to pick the players that a crapshoot. Some of it's a crapshoot for sure. But you know what? If you do your homework, it's taking the deepest dive. And I'm not saying the teams that fail in their draft choices don't take deep dives. Got to be a little lucky here too. But at the end of the day, the Orioles have clicked on theirs, as Houston did with theirs. You know, and some teams, and you know,
I would say more teams who try to follow that formula, they don't hit in the way that the Houstons and the Baltimores have.
Not with the number that they've hit.
No.
That's for sure. I'm not saying they hit, but they don't hit with the they don't, they're not, you know, not to the success ratio that those two teams have had. No.
Right. All right, one more before we land the plane here. Like I said, it's a festive time in New York City right now. Big reason why is because the Knicks and the Rangers, they're in the second round of their postseasons. How into this are you with the Knicks and the Rangers and their postseason runs?
I'm into it. I've been in the sports business a very long time, and I was a sports producer for many, many years. I'm still a producer. I mean, I'm an executive, but I'm still very much a producer. And I enjoy sports on its own terms. I enjoy the competition of sports. I enjoy the things that make the games exciting to everybody. I enjoy the same things. But I tend to look at things. I'm a little divorced as to, the fandom, because I'm a professional. So I'm not, although I must confess to be very partial to the Yankees. I am. I very care very much about the Yankees. I grew up a Yankee fan. That fandom part of me, if there is fandom in me, it's in two places. It's in the Yankees and the Jets. That's where my fandom lies. The Yankees do for a lot, and the Jets pretty much a lot, a great deal too. I mean, I care about the Jets too. So that's really it as a fan. Do I follow the Knicks? I do, but we have the Nets, and I'm kind of, yeah. I'm going to work with somebody. It's more the Nets, and I'm not really a hockey fan in the overview, although I produced hockey as a professional. So I appreciate the game for what it is, and I appreciate the run that the Rangers are on, and the run that the Knicks are on has been really quite interesting to watch. That Philly series was really very intense and very interesting, as this series is going to be now, they're up 1-0 now. I believe that it's fun. It's, if you live in New York, it's a great time. You've got the Rangers and the Knicks for sure, and you've also got the Yankees playing well, and the Mets have not been the Mets are not playing terrible.
I think they've done a really nice job given their slow start.
Considering they started with 0-5 or 0-6 when they started, they've come back rather nicely, and they're hanging in there. So if you're in New York, there's no reason not to be a sports fan, right? New York, it's a really good time. Springtime, to your point earlier, it's springtime, which is one of the most exciting, wonderful times of the year, when the weather's starting to get warm now. So the chill has left the air. You start to get a little warm. So it's fun to go out. The sun is out. People want to hang out. They want to start going to the beach pretty soon. And there's lots of reason to be outside, and sports gives you another reason for that, or if not, to stay inside and watch some television is not bad either.
100%. I just think it's cool that the Garden's busy with some type of playoff game each and every night, this week especially. And I love how the Yankee players are really wrapped in and invested into both teams, and the Knicks and the Rangers. You're seeing players arrive to the stadium in Rangers or Knicks jerseys. They're going out to the Garden when they have some free time. They've talked about it, and I know they look at that, they see that atmosphere, they sit there courtside or ringside, and they've said it. Just imagine what it could be like in October again when the Yankees crack the postseason and are able to make a deep run. It'll take over the city the way that the Garden atmosphere is currently taking over the city here in this spring season.
That's true. And it's, like you said, there's a lot of reasons to be excited. But I'd be remiss to close this thing not to discuss something that I wanted to discuss and I didn't get to, but I want to discuss it. There's a show.
These are how podcasts work, John. We just go off the cuff.
That's the beauty of them, right? They should be natural conversations. Like, there should be just ebb and flow of going back and forth and having whatever comes in your head, you talk about it, as long as it's, doesn't get you, fired, you're okay with it, right? So I was at an event last night as we record this. It was at the Paley Center in Manhattan, and it was to premiere a show that we're putting on YES, which will debut Thursday night. It'll be air on YES initially, and then it'll go to the YES app. And it's called "The Story of My Number," and it is take a number of a player, like say Roger Maris number 9, right? And then there's the history of what that number meant to the Yankees, or what a number Roger Maris may have wore in his career, and you kind of explore that. And it's a very nice, interesting concept. But the reality of the show, it's so much deeper than that. And that reality was realized in the premiere. When I saw the premiere episode, the people who put it together, led by John Abamondo, one of the people who put it together for us, Jason Fanique kind of began in it. I have to give credit to a whole lot of Ken Sunshine. A lot of people worked on this, and they've done it. They did an incredible job with this. And Aaron Boone is in the debut episode, and he could not be more engaging, funny, interesting, And this thing morphs from just a bunch of numbers into a reality stream of interesting conversation and facts, the point of which I have not seen a show like that on television in a very long time. It's called The Story of My Number, and you could catch it on initially on Yes and then on the Yes app. It's very, very good. It's very engaging. And the panel last night was Tito Martinez, who does it in the series. He's somewhere in the series, as is Nick Swisher. It was Aaron Boone, and it was Brian Cashman's daughter was the host, and she did as a host of the series, but the panel was hosted by Michael Kay, and they did Gracie Cashman is the is Brian's daughter's name, and they did an incredible job. It was one of the most entertaining nights I've spent in a really long time listening to the stories that were going back and forth, but not only about numbers, but about everything else in the game of baseball. I wish that everybody could have had a chance to see this, witness this presentation, because it was quite remarkable. So entertaining, so fun, so engaging. The show is that very much so. I don't really go, I usually don't sit here and do, reviews, especially of our own shows. But this
Right.
show is a must watch. I am telling you, you get a chance to watch this. I don't think you'll regret it for one second. It's really very enjoyable, very engaging, very different, and you will leave. Having said, I've had a good time with this. I really enjoyed it. And please check that out, is my advice to anybody who's listening to this.
Yeah, that's the story of my number. It's Aaron on Yes, and then on the Yes app, and a deep dive, not just about uniform numbers, but just a big winding web of numbers. It's a deep dive. It's pretty interesting. The story of my number on the Yes Network and the Yes app. Quick reminder, Yankees Astros this week. Two of the three games are on Yes. Middle game on Wednesday, Amazon Prime. Thursday's game's at 5:05, so make sure you're locked in for those games. All right, that's going to do it, John. This is another episode of the Curtain Call Podcast. For John J. Filippelli, for our great producer, Dan Bassone, I'm Justin Shackle. We will talk to you next time on the Curtain Call Pod, a production of the Yes Network. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you.